Good afternoon, and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, December 15th, 2007. I'm Harley Schlanger, and I will be your host. As members of the LaRouche Youth Movement began an organizing drive to get out 500,000 copies of the new LaRouche Pack pamphlet, Is the Devil in Your Laptop?, there were two more events which conformed to the pattern identified by Lyndon LaRouche in his introduction to that pamphlet titled From Milken and Enron to Perugia, Extreme Events. In that essay, LaRouche demonstrates that the same mass insanity which has plunged the banking system into a systemic collapse underlies the proliferation of potential mass killers through their involvement in interactive sites such as MySpace and Facebook, and a deep involvement in violent computer games. The mass murder in a mall in Omaha, Nebraska, and the two churches that were shot up in Colorado were done by individuals who fit the same pattern as the mass slayings last spring at Virginia Tech in Blacksburg, Virginia, and more recently at a high school near Helsinki, Finland. What LaRouche points to in his article is what he calls the dynamic form of a social mass phenomenon. He concludes that this mass phenomenon is presently creating hundreds, if not thousands, of a new kind of terrorist in the United States, of the same sort as the suicide bombers we have seen unleashed against civilian populations in Southwest Asia. Today, and then again next Saturday, we're going to take an in-depth look at this threat of a new kind of homegrown terrorism. And we're going to analyze it, we're going to discuss the alternative, the solution to it. Joining me will be two panels, which will include LaRouche Youth Movement members who are authors of the articles in this pamphlet, are doing continuing research, and are part of the team that's going out onto the campuses to pull young people away from their computers, get their hands off their joysticks, and get their heads back in the human race. So in the first hour today, my guests will be Rihanna St. Classis, Mark Samet, and Nick Walsh. I'd like to start with Nick, who contributed articles in the pamphlet on Facebook, and the second article, Terrorism Comes to the West, The New Cult of the Teenage Suicide Bomber. Nick is also presently working in the war room to ensure that 500,000 of these pamphlets are distributed by the end of this year. And repeatedly during this show, we're going to tell you how you can get your hands on these pamphlets to read them, to study them, and to get them to parents who have children who are locked up in a bedroom right now being turned into zombie killers, and also to get them out on the campuses where, believe it or not, a lot of young people are watching their brains drain out completely and are being turned into stone-cold killers. So, Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Now, I've given somewhat of an overview, but I'd like you to take the opportunity of the start of this program to discuss this pamphlet and what we're doing with it. What's the purpose of a mass distribution of this pamphlet?
Well, the purpose is to prevent the self-destruction of the United States. And that's based on the fact that we have to recruit young people, particularly in the 16 to 25 age bracket, to not only be involved in politics, but to actually be engaged in defining what the future of the planet, what the future of the country as a whole is going to be. Now, what we've found, and that's what we're up to with the LaRouche Political Action Committee, our expertise is recruiting young people and getting young people involved in LaRouche's politics. We found that with the mobilization that we're in now to pass LaRouche's Homeowner and Bank Protection Act of 2007, along with a series of other flanks that coincide with this idea, we've been getting enormous participation from local and state elected officials, signing the bill, passing it through their city councils, endorsing it, getting on shows with us and interviews and different types of things and speaking for the thing. This is in Texas and California, Washington, Arkansas, Massachusetts, Illinois, Pennsylvania, all across the country. The thing that has been lacking from this mobilization to pass this bill has been the right kind of participation from the youth. particularly from the college age, let's say, bracket youth. Youth that are old enough to participate but are doing something else. And so what LaRouche identified as we were fighting this, he said, listen, the problem here is what you, Harley, brought up. The problem is that there's a mass-based fascist movement recruiting young people to be brain dead, and in some cases to become homicidal maniacs, but to most definitely be completely disassociated from reality and unable to be concerned with what's going on in reality. And this was MySpace, Facebook, two huge social networking sites on the internet, and a whole variety of killer computer games, mostly produced by Bill Gates' Microsoft Corporation and others like it. LaRouche said these three things have to be destroyed. If you want to have a country that is able to participate in developing the future of the world, then you got to get the young people involved, and to do that, you have to get them off of these social mental control, social programming technologies.
Now, Nick, one of the hallmarks of Lyndon LaRouche over the years is that he tells the truth and doesn't pull his punches. Is that why the title is provocative? Is the devil in your laptop? I mean, how? what does that do?
Well, this is it's truthful and it's provocative, which, you know, oftentimes coincide. Because as we looked into this thing that LaRouche focused us on, these three aspects of this problem with youth, we found that this was indeed a major problem. That these things are not minor little elements of the culture. That, you know, when you get on your computer maybe at night for 15 minutes, there's a little bit of a fantasy going on. We're talking about young people spending minimally hours a day on sites that are full of no creativity allowed, but nothing but gore, pornography, violence, suicide, and in the computer games, just mass killing. Over and over and over again.
Now, let me just say that during the course of the hour today and then the hour for next week, we're going to be talking about where these come from, how they function. We'll look at things such as Facebook and MySpace. But let me just hone in on what you discuss in your second article in the pamphlet, the question of the creation of terrorists. Now, Lyndon LaRouche said we're going to see terrorists, suicidal terrorists of the sort that we're accustomed to seeing going into crowded places in Southwest Asia and blowing themselves up. Make the parallel for us. How is that a parallel with what we're seeing coming out of these games?
Well, you have two things, I think, to focus on. One is what these games create for people is a alternative universe. It's a disassociated from reality universe, like the game Doom, which Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold of the Columbine School Massacre trained on for you can't count the number of hours these kids played in this thing. They, in this game, were like I said, disassociating themselves from a real universe where there's consequences for your actions, where there's principles governing what you do. Where you're dealing with real human beings, we're dealing with love, emotion, all these things, does not exist in the game. But B, the other thing is they were in the game training themselves and developing in themselves an ability and a will to kill. That the more they played these games, the more they were able to shoot well, able to kill. Actually, and these two guys did not shoot many real live weapons. Most of their training was done on the internet, on the computer games. But B, an increasing tendency toward this kind of violence, an increasing association with what you do on Doom, which is killing, as their primary reality.
And is it fair to say that most of the other recent killers look to the Columbine case as a kind of copycat, as an event to be emulated?
No doubt, no doubt. I mean, the parallel is only a fool or a liar would actually say that wasn't the case. You've had the fellow in Omaha said, I'm going to beat Cho's point score. The guy in Colorado that
and
shot
Cho,
up these...
just so people know, Cho yeah. was the Blacksburg, Virginia killer.
Right, yeah, exactly, who had trained on the game Counter-Strike. The fellow in Colorado... he posted on his website in between the two killing sprees that he went on. He went on one in the morning at a group, a religious group. Then about an hour or so later, he did a second mass shooting at a church about 50 miles away in Colorado. In between those two shootings, he posted on his website the exact verbatim so-called manifesto of what Eric Harris had written on his website about 10 years ago before he did Columbine. Now, the one other thing that I would mention in this, Harley, is that these kids are on these games training and training and training. But, very importantly, they're also being monitored as they're doing this training. They're not merely just on the game. Most of these games are being played online, on the internet, where you're playing against people and trying to shoot people that are also playing in different parts of the world. We've found that the owners of these gaming companies very closely monitor and keep very detailed statistics on what each of these killers on these games are doing. And our present hypothesis is that these kids are being triggered at certain points and being deployed in certain ways on this internet through social networking sites and other things to carry out these terrorist actions in real public situations at certain times.
Now, I'm going to ask you one more question, then I'm going to go to Rihanna to discuss some of the background of this. But let's just for a moment take the argument you get from the gaming industry. Millions of people are engaged in these games, and only a couple have gone off and shot up malls. And so how can you say there's a correlation? Isn't this just the barest of connections?
Well, first of all, it's going to get a lot worse, as it already is now. I think we're only seeing the beginning of a problem here. If we allow this to continue, it's going to get worse as the economy collapses, as the political situation, if there's no solution provided, and society descends into more and more hopelessness. These types of things are going to become more and more of a regular phenomenon in an oncoming dark age. Also, though, you have to ask people, there are going to be a lot of people that play these games that never commit a mass shooting. That's true. But what is their identity? What is the identity of a human being who takes great pleasure and has the most passion in their life is for getting onto a made-up game and shooting different types of monsters and human images and splatting blood all over the place for hours and hours and hours on end? At least that person is in a clinically identifiable schizophrenic state of mind.
And is also the kind of malleable personality who can be induced to carry out such acts.
Absolutely.
Well, you're listening to The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, the 15th of December, 2007. The LaRouche Show is live every Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can find us. If you miss a program, you can go to LaRouchePub.com. Now, since we're on a sort of longer format today, we can take your emails. I want to give out that email address early so you can ask questions of our panelists. It's radio, R-A-D-I-O, at LaRouchePub.com. That's radio at LaRouchePub.com. And we're talking today about the creation of terrorists in the United States. And as I pointed out at the beginning of this program, just in the last 12 days, we had two instances of individuals, one of whom went into a shopping mall in Omaha and turned it into a shooting gallery. Another went into a church in Arvada, Colorado, and then later a mega church. And had he not been confronted, may have killed a lot more people. In both cases, it's believed the two shooters killed themselves. Now, I want to just take a look a little bit at the question that Nick just posed, which is, what kind of society, what are you inducing as a sense of the image of man in a culture where you have this kind of entertainment? Rihanna, I'd like to pose to you the question of the background to this. We've identified, in fact, we have a very eerie picture on the cover of this pamphlet with Bertrand Russell there. How does Russell fit into this cultural phenomenon that we're investigating?
Well, I mean, I think what people often don't address, particularly when it comes to their primary mode of identification, what they think of as their culture, and particularly youth. And I know, Harley, you wrote an article at one time called "Who Owns Your Culture," which addressed the question of music industry and what people identify with, and some of the people who are now a little bit older as their culture about 5 years ago. So what I think we find now, I mean, a lot of these young people don't really think about where MySpace, Facebook, these video games, or the whole idea of their internet identity actually came from. And what we found, and what LaRouche really directed us to in doing the initial work on this pamphlet, was the circles around Bertrand Russell and H.G. Wells. And it seems sort of a funny idea, because if you look at H.G. Wells, for instance, most people are familiar with him from the standpoint of his science fiction works.
Sure. The Time Machine.
Yeah, right. But and even a cheesy sort of cult movie called Things to Come that people sort of laugh at. And what Matthew Ogden goes into in the first article in the pamphlet is actually the fact that Wells is writing really a manifesto. And if you look at what he says, and he's very open, one, about his fascist leanings, and the fact that he says we need a liberal fascisti, we need an enlightened Hitler. But not only is he's open about that, but he's open about the idea of how you're going to have social control in society. And both he and Russell are very explicit about the fact that the future control of society will really come from these sociologists, from psychologists, from people, manipulating society. And they find pretty rapidly that working with individuals' psychologies and individual brainwashing, you might say, isn't really all that effective.
So the question then is, how do you create a group psychology or a social dynamic where you move people away from the principles of reason and the cultural and technological optimism?
Yeah, exactly. How do you create a culture which will, in a sense, monitor itself and prevent itself from creating an opposition to the intent of the authors, which in the case of Russell's and Wells, and Russell's fairly explicit about this as well, is the expansion of the an idea of the British Empire.
Let me just ask you, in Wells and Russell, LaRouche has said these were top officials in promoting the British Empire. What do you think is Russell's ultimate vision? I mean, here's a man who's supposedly a philosopher, a mathematician. Do you see these elements of social and mass control in, for example, his writings on mathematics?
Well, certainly. I mean, what you really see, and when we talk about the title of the pamphlet, is "The Devil in Your Laptop." And when we speak of, or in our other pamphlets, the children of Satan, and people get very upset sometimes about our use of this idea of the devil or Satan, in a political context, it confuses them that we're not some sort of fundamentalist religious grouping or something. Mm-hmm. But Russell's idea is really that human beings don't have a soul. And in his mathematical works and his philosophical works, his intent is to destroy the idea of creativity, the idea that ideas in the universe can be known. And so, of course, in the Principia, his sense is that you can create essentially with a few basic axioms that you don't question, you can elaborate everything which is possibly known in the universe.
Now, what's wrong? Just for our listeners who haven't figured out what LaRouche is saying on Russell yet, what's wrong with the idea of having a shorthand through mathematics that take you to the answers at the end of the book, so to speak?
Well, having a shorthand and having equations isn't necessarily a terrible thing. What's wrong is the idea that's all science actually is. Hmm. When in fact, that's just, as LaRouche has said often, the detritus. I mean, that's just what's left after the animal has gone away. And the real nature of science is creatively making discoveries and coming to know things that had never been known before. The real subject of science is the human mind. And that's what Russell denies, is really the existence of a human mind. They might want to substitute some sort of Wells certainly talks about substituting a mechanistic computer-like system for that. And of course, Russell's followers do as well. And the whole idea of cybernetics is that...
Wiener and von Neumann. We'll get into them more in the second hour, but Wiener and von Neumann certainly had this idea that you can create the same quality of creative capability in a computer.
Right, and again, the underlying idea is that creativity in reality doesn't exist, and therefore the human soul doesn't exist, and that goes right in line with a system of government which denies the creative potential, denies mm-hmm. the humanity of masses of human beings on the planet. And of course, I mean, we could look at the treatment of people in Africa, China, and really now, I mean, within the British system or the U.S. system itself, within the country itself, the way we're treating our own so-called underclass.
Well, we've got a lot to cover here, and I think this is important that... this question of Wells and Russell is incorporated into this, because we are talking about a process which will destroy the capability of self-government. Now, on that, I have a question I'd like to direct to Nick. We got an email in from Stephen, who writes, I keep hearing about young people addicted to video games. I work with a 40-year-old man who is addicted as well. Is this cross-generational, and what does that mean? Well, to me, a 40-year-old is a young man. But anyway, Nick, what about that?
Well, I'd say it's definitely cross-generational. It's more and more focused on the younger and younger people. Like Russell said in one of these crazy writings, if you can get people convinced that snow is black before they're 10, you've basically got them. You've got them, you know, for life. You have them controlled. But the culture as a whole, this thing that we've looked at, is this cybernetics, this crazy modern internet culture, comes straight from the MySpace culture of the baby boomers, where you have the same thing with the LSD experimentation, the use of TV, the use of mass, you know, Dionysian festivals like rock concerts, where everyone's jumping up and down together to the same beats and the same rhythms. This is the same exact type of sociological control mechanisms that you see on the internet.
As one of our associates likes to point out, what was the counterculture in the 60s has become the culture.
Yeah, exactly. And I think with the internet, it's a bit more sophisticated, actually, because on the internet, it's much more of a hands-on sense of the user that's using the joystick or whatever they're using, that they're in control and they're actually creating a reality unto themselves on their computer. And the more you get these graphics and these simulations that look and appear and sense to be more and more so-called real to the senses, the more the individual playing this game, especially a young, impressionable mind, actually believes that this is reality. It's even maybe better than reality, because here I can do anything I want. Whereas in the real world, if I punch someone or, you know, whatever, or do this or do that, I'm going to get in trouble by my parents.
Or a 40-year-old might get arrested by the police.
Well,
or actually, these days, a lot of 40-year-olds are still living with their parents, given the nature of the economy. You're listening to The LaRouche Show. I'm going to give you the toll-free number you can call to get the pamphlet. And what we'd like you to do is go on the website, the LaRouchePact.com website, where the pamphlet is available. Also, I believe it's on LaRouchePub.com. But if you want to distribute it, you can call our office. We'll get out a bundle, two bundles, a couple of boxes, a truckload, however many you need to go mobilize on the local campus or workplace. That number is 800-929-7566. It's toll-free. It's the LaRouche PAC office. It's 800-929-7566. Now, I'd like to bring in our third panelist for this first hour, Mark Samet, who's been working in the editorial function in Leesburg and has been working with people doing the research on this. Mark, you've been listening to Nick and Rihanna. What are your thoughts on this question? How do you see what we have to do to create the changes necessary?
Yeah, one thing I was just thinking about, I mean, you kind of have to laugh at the people that are conducting this kind of warfare against the culture right now. But there's something also inherently tragic about it. One thing that I was thinking about was the way that Lyndon LaRouche opened up his recent memo on video game killers and the dynamics behind it was he mentioned that the people that are doing this are kind of like a witch's brew. And so I was thinking about the way that the Shakespeare's tragedy Macbeth opens up. And it opens up with this witch's brew. You've got these three witches that manage to convince Macbeth that you know, that there's some kind of fate that he will then at some point become the king. And I thought, like, well, this is interesting, because what is the problem in the culture that Macbeth is so susceptible to this kind of really irrational, mystical persuasion? So I was thinking about it, and this comes up in the context of Facebook and MySpace and some of the new phenomenon which is coming out around this stuff, especially now that Bill Gates and Rupert Murdoch are running these networks.
Yeah, Gates bought into Facebook, and Murdoch owns MySpace.
Exactly. So you've got these new quote-unquote advertising mechanisms. Like in the case of Facebook, you've got something called the Beacon, which has been somewhat controversial for a lot of different people because, you know, it invades privacy and so on and so forth. Well, the basic idea of it, and I'm going to get into some other forms of so-called advertising that are anything but just simply innocent advertising. But basically, what it does is it monitors what your friends are doing and tells you exactly what they're doing as part of what's called a news feed. So if I'm on my Facebook account and I've got 50 friends, I know exactly what those 50 friends are buying, where they hang out, you know, what they updated in their profile, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you have to look at this from the standpoint of the social dynamics of what are they actually trying to create here. They're trying to create a consensus of some sort, and really control people politically, because right now, really, the only thing that we have to do is prevent the world economic system from falling on its face. So I was looking at some of this kind of stuff, and it turns out that there's even a higher development of advertising which is taking place on the internet, which is entirely invisible. And this is something which is being used for, you know, rock albums, it's being used for video games, and again, the same circles, the Microsoft circles, your top media company circles, which are doing this. But what it is, it's something called viral advertising, or also alternative reality games. And what these things do is they have rabbit holes, with what are called rabbit holes, all over the internet, where some, you know, unwilling dupe would accidentally stumble upon a website that they think is actually a legitimate website, but which is actually part of a psychological game. Right? Like, for example, like you would stumble upon a series of websites that are all interlinked with each other that tell you that it's actually not the year 2007. We're not actually in a you know, a political fight to save our country. But it's the year 2047, and the real battle is whether or not computers and androids are going to be given civil rights. So they'll create these fictions where entire groups of people will have to work together to try to solve this puzzle of what the heck are these websites, right? Is it real? Like, is it a game? And it turns out that as these things develop, this whole scheduled, puppet-mastered, thing, this zoo, is set on a schedule. So they'll actually get people. They'll send out faxes, emails,
phone
calls.
Someone might know that, might plan a whole schedule around getting home at 9 o'clock at night so they can be on the computer to engage in this social dynamic.
No. I mean that somebody—it's the equivalent of somebody actually being on like a reality television show, where you have a group of people who are controlling the actions of this fictional storyline, which is playing out over the internet, but that it actually spills into the real world. Where these people are asked to go on trips, they're sent plane tickets and train tickets and these kinds of things, and they're actually, because this, what this actually is directed to do, is to get individuals and groups to act in particular ways, and that's how it's being studied. That's how it's being studied.
So this goes back to what Nick was saying, in that you have controllers of these games, who actually are moving to the point where they can control the behavior of people.
Yeah, under the guise of advertising.
Yeah. Well, we have an open board here for your email questions. You can send them to us at radio@larouchepub.com. And I'd like to throw open to all of our panelists a question that I was hit with when Mark was talking about Macbeth. And LaRouche has written a lot recently about this question of tragedy, most importantly, The Mask of Nancy Pelosi. But what's the difference between the violence in Shakespeare's Macbeth and the violence in the world of Warcraft? I mean, someone might argue, well, Shakespeare's very violent, so are you saying it's just the violence? Any of you want to comment on that? Rihanna?
Well, I mean, for one thing, it's interesting, the question. Because
it's not a game.
Well, for one thing, what Shakespeare is actually going into in the play, what he is developing, is an idea about the culture as a whole, and how it is that the culture is set to destroy itself. So he's depicting, and in that depiction, he is showing the insanity that human beings are capable of when they deny what their real relationship with the universe is, as a creative individual, as someone who has, the power that Johannes Kepler talks of in being made in the image of the Creator, being able to participate in the creation. By discovering how the Creator organized the universe and what he did, and LaRouche often talks about this as well, and it's very different than the creation of a culture in which people participate in gratuitous violence for the sake of participating in violence for no real reason at all except for a pleasure. And the idea of getting pleasure from participating in an alternate reality, but then also the idea of getting pleasure from more and more brutal kinds of depictions on these video games of the way in which people are killed, like in Manhunt 2, for instance, which I've never really seen the game. I've only seen images from it on the internet, but from what I understand, you're a first-person player who is a mass murderer, and you get better points. You get more points for killing people in the most brutal fashion that you can. And so what that is, that is the actual tragic quality that Shakespeare is demonstrating, ironically enough, so that people are participating in.
We might say in the one, then, in Shakespeare, he's making self-conscious to the audience, the, as LaRouche writes, that which grips a society and causes it in a tragic direction. He's making the audience aware of how, just like the people on the stage, there's a controlling factor that's holding them back and controlling their minds, whereas in the video games, it's just about controlling the minds. Is that fair, Nick?
Yeah, that's good. Exactly.
Yeah, and the what I've been told about, you take like Greek drama, when they used to perform Greek drama, the subject of the drama was not the sense-perceptive detail, but it was actually the cognitive detail. That mm-hmm. which is not sense-perceptive was the subject of the drama. For example, they would, for these long dramas featuring many characters, they'd have them performed by maybe two people who would wear, they'd have a chorus also in the drama, but they'd have a couple of people who would wear masks. And so you wouldn't ever even see the person's face. You'd have a mask, and it was through the way that they'd sing and recite the lines and change their voice that they'd convey different characters and different ideas. The essence of this thing right now, with this, you take, there's a lot of different forms of this type of manipulation, but you take this thing that's really the problem right now, the virtual reality culture. The basis of being able to lure people into it and get people engaged is to get them more and more and more committed to their sense perception. To give up their mind. Not to think. Not to actually analyze and think about the fact this is just a digital system. But to say, wow, it looks real. And the sound effects, they sound like something that occurs outside in the street. And, you know, now they're developing things where they even have collars that you might put on that emit certain smells when something's going on in the simulation. So it smells real. So you're being reduced to the level of a dog.
I assume if someone plays these games for about 48 hours at a time, you get a certain kind of odor coming from the play themselves.
Well, they're not known to bathe very much.
Now, let me, Nick, you wrote a piece on Facebook, and also Mark may have some comments on this, but some people differentiate. I've spoken on a number of radio programs on this, and the host always says, well, I can see what you're saying with World of Warcraft or Counter-Strike, but what's so dangerous about MySpace and Facebook? Aren't these really just ways that people communicate? So what is it that you identified in these two, in Facebook and MySpace? And by the way, which also were things that were obvious to Gates, who is involved in Facebook and also producing the violent games. What's the connection there?
Well, look at, first of all, Facebook and MySpace, Gates and Murdoch are friends. The first thing to realize, there is no competition. There is no alternative between one or the other, which is the popular line. Well, I don't like MySpace. I'm into Facebook. These two things are doing the exact same thing. Now, what are they doing? They're inviting you to get into a suicidal state of mind. For example, take the case of this girl, Megan Meyer, who was on I think she was on MySpace. And a neighbor created a fictional persona named Josh, which lured this girl, this 13-year-old girl, into a fantasy love relationship online, which this girl thought was real. This girl was known to have psychological problems by the woman doing this, depression problems. And then at a certain point, this guy Josh was intentionally turned into a nasty little creature, telling this girl she was no good, etc. The so-called relationship was cut off. What did the girl do? She hung herself in her bedroom that night. Now, this was done intentionally by this neighbor and also a couple other people who were involved in it. But it could never have been done without the medium of the MySpace Facebook format.
Mm-hmm.
That you couldn't have done these things before this was designed and developed and commercialized like it is. And that's the purpose. These things are intended to allow and to facilitate and to cultivate people that will relate to each other not based on who they really are, or not based on any noble quality of humanity, but you're seeking relationships on MySpace and Facebook because you want to be in a fantasy world.
You want friends, right? You want to be known.
Well, you want fiends.
Yeah.
I mean, because all you are creating on these forms is a fantasy. It's not based on reality because no principles are allowed to come into this domain of the virtual reality. You can be whoever you want to be. Now, like Mark was going over with the Facebook, the beacon thing. These things, Gates and Murdoch, are involved in globalization, in trying to establish a one-world government. Gates himself, his primary passion is the violent video games, which he knows result in people going off into their schools and killing each other. He knows that these things result in suicides. And he pushes them all the more. And this is the guy that's buying into Facebook and saying, well, we've got a monitoring capability on the video game. We can watch how violent different people are. We've got the social networking on Facebook. We can study their personalities, their likes, their dislikes. These guys are starting to craft a complete 360-degree view of the intricate psychoses, neuroses, and habits, thought habits, of the entire youth generation. And they intend on using it for evil purposes.
Now, I'll throw this out to all three of you as a follow-up to that. Another element that LaRouche often writes about a human society is the development of language, the development of metaphor, the ability to communicate and use irony to present new concepts, the same way that you look at Kepler's scientific work and the irony of the equant, for example, or in classical music composition, the way that irony is the introduction of new ideas through transformations with the Lydian interval, for example. Now, one of his arguments is that part of the destruction of a republic is the destruction of the ability for human communication. And how do you see that from both the interactive social networks, the Facebook and MySpace, and then also the video games? Is this a significant element of how that affects the ability of a republic to function? Mark, you want to take a stab at it, or Rihanna?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Yeah, how can you think straight when you've been basically turning yourself into a barbarian for hours and hours on end every day? I mean, the thing here, if you look at Aldous Huxley and George Orwell, and the way that George Orwell talks about this, you know, his concept of newspeak, which is pretty much, you know, in his science fiction, a degenerate form of English, right, where you have in all the world basically one language which is dumbed down to several hundred words or something like that. Well, you know, that's sort of the intention of a lot of these oligarchs, to turn mankind back into a cow that eats grass. And I see it happening, especially on the internet, where people just sort of, you know, grunt back and forth to each other. The way that they relate is based on, you know, what interests do they have, what objects are they fascinated with, what photographs do they present themselves as. And none of it is real. All of it is sort of just a Venetian curtain where we present each other, we present ourselves to others in a way in which we fantasize about ourselves, not in the way that we actually are.
And Rihanna, I think you were about to say something on that.
Well, yeah, I was actually. I mean, there's an interesting other element to the pamphlet, which is that this is this is really the first pamphlet that the youth movement has put out itself, with all of the content produced by the youth movement. And one thing that we found in doing that, and over the years of over the years of the development of the youth movement, over the last I've been involved for about six now, is trying to communicate ideas through writing, which is something that has been lost to a great deal by youth today, even those who passed high school and went to college. And you see this when you do a scan of people's MySpace or Facebook profiles and the descriptions that they put in and the things that they say. And I, for a couple of presentations that I gave, I went and found some dialogues that had taken place as an example of the way in which people communicate online and what kind of idea content they have. And then also, you know, how the lack of concentration in developing any kind of real concept. And so, and we saw that in trying to produce the pamphlet, that there is a struggle in our generation, and particularly in those who are younger than us, even more so, to communicate ideas in a concentrated way. And the loss of a rich language is evident from looking at how people communicate on or try to talk to each other online, and the abbreviated sort of text message type words become more and more and more prevalent.
Well, Mark brought up this question of newspeak, and I do think, as one who's been studying this, working with LaRouche for over 30 years, there is a degeneration of the language culture, a degeneration of an ability to present ideas other than shouting or shorthand, which really tries to convey something that's commonly known and which is not really even necessary to convey. So I think this is another element of getting at this question of what the solution is, you know, the question of really reviving great culture. And I'd like to throw this out also to every one of you. At what point do you lose a generation to the extent that a dark age is inevitable? I know we're talking now about the full-scale breakdown of the financial system, not as something that might come in the next decade, but as something that we're in the middle of right now. The banking system is frozen up. We're headed toward a Weimar-style hyperinflation, with Bernanke saying we're going to dump helicopters of money out there to try and bail it out. There's a breakdown crisis. You can't trust the bridge you drive across, and you can't feel safe going into a shopping mall, which ought to be terrifying a lot of Americans, as this is the so-called Christmas shopping season, where everyone goes psycho until they run out of credit cards. So to what point, at what extent, I mean, let me ask it this way. We're out there organizing with this pamphlet. Do you see a capability from what we've done so far? And let me start with Nick, because he's got the overview, and then Rihanna, you may want to say something from the organizing on the West Coast. But are we seeing that there are people who are able to get the concentration to read through these articles and think about it? And is there hope we can overturn this dark age?
Oh, certainly. There certainly is. And I think what you're saying, though, is true. We're certainly close to losing it. We're really at a turning point right now in history. And everybody involved in this, everyone listening and whatnot, has to realize how crucial of a turning point we're at for human history. It's as important as moments that created our nation, moments of the Greek Renaissance, the Italian Renaissance, because we can go one of two ways. We can go where we get out of this crisis, or we can completely be self-destroyed. I mean, we've never had suicide bombers in the United States. I think, Harley, that to me is really a sign of how close we are to losing this youth generation, that it's young people that have taken up a totally new form of terror, perpetrated against their own peers, and now even more broadly in the shopping malls and things. This is a real breakdown of what used to be something that was intolerable in American culture that never happened.
Nick, let me just, because I think this is such an important point, that people still think of the Columbine case or the case in Finland or any number of school shootings as aberrations. But what LaRouche is saying, and what you document in your article, is that, in fact, almost on a daily basis now, policemen are intervening in high schools all over the country and junior highs, where people are communicating to each other on MySpace, YouTube, Facebook, their admiration for the people at Littleton. This really is something that's going on now, and it is parallel to the suicide bombings, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, and it's totally manipulated, and it's completely controlled and deployed from the top down. These kids that are involved in this thing are not in their right minds. And I don't think they have any idea what they're... They have no clue what they're involved in. They don't know what they're being controlled by. They're being pulled different ways by insane elements in this society.
And Nick, from looking at the case studies, is there advanced indication in most of these cases that something's about to go off?
Oh, sure. Oh, the Columbine case was warned about by parents in the neighborhood to the police 6 months, 7 months in advance. A number of these things almost all of them are publicized and advertised before they happen on the internet. But Harley, I think this thing that you're asking about, the point that the fact that people are so unaware of how they're being manipulated in the most extreme cases of these suicide bombing youth, but also just in the average young person on MySpace and Facebook who's being terribly manipulated, the fact that they don't know how it's being done is our chance to actually save things and change things. Because what we've been finding is going out with this pamphlet, people have been eagerly grabbing it up, and much more so than some of the other stuff we have put out. Where with the young people, they are sitting down and reading it. Huge numbers of people are reading it, highlighting it, you know, yakking with their friends about it, coming back to our tables and asking questions about it, because we're intervening into something here that these people are not aware of is actually going on. It's central to their lives, but they haven't actually really considered any other view than, oh, this is just what we've always done since I was 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be destroyed. This virtual reality phenomenon can be destroyed. If it's not, we aren't going to survive as a country. But if it is, this young generation, I think, could participate in leading our country out of this mess.
Well, again, if people want to get copies of this pamphlet, give us a call. It's 800-929-7566. That's the toll-free number, and you can order any number of these that you want. 800-929-7566. Now, Rihanna, you've been organizing out on the West Coast, I believe recently in the Bay Area. There are a lot of campuses there. What's the reaction we're getting? I know we're getting tons of them out.
Yeah, actually, it's been, like Nick said, it's been very interesting how electric the response is at times. And even on campuses where normally I was told people would not take our literature, they're too cool to talk to us, or, you know, they ignore us almost altogether, people were grabbing these pamphlets. And what I found, which I thought was very, very interesting in having longer conversations with people out on the street and on the telephone, is that a lot of these young people are very open to talk about this. They're not as closed as I thought they would be. And they're very curious. And the other thing is, going back a little bit to the fact that, you know, we had young people put together all of the material for this, there's been a lot of interest that it was people in their own peer group or just a little bit older who did all of the research, who wrote the articles in the pamphlet. And I found a lot of people were very, very intrigued by that idea. And so, as Nick said, as desperate and hard as things look, at the same time, I think that the potential for a real turnaround and for a renaissance is very high, partially because there is such a desert of ideas out there. There's such a contrast between what we are showing is young people are capable of doing and what's generally being experienced in the culture overall. And so there's a lot of people who are responding in a very excited manner and are very excited to come, you know, to our offices to talk to us about it and to start participating in taking a real active role in determining what their culture is going to be. And I've also found a lot of young people very excited about the idea of going to city councils. We went with a young man who joined us for organizing one day to testify at the city council in San Jose. And he was just completely enthralled at the idea that you could go up and talk to the mayor of San Jose, that he was accessible and that, you know, it was possible to talk to these people, that there wasn't some sort of a bubble around them, and that he could start thinking about participating directly in politics, which was something he hadn't ever really considered before. So I think the potential for a real wave of youth participation, you know, even in this coming presidential election, is very great.
Well, I think also Nick and I were on a radio show the other night, and the host was appealing to his demographics for his show, which were parents, and basically saying to them, parents, don't be afraid to go up to your child and talk to them, but you should be concerned with what they're doing up in the attic or the bedroom or on the computer. And one of the things that we're finding is that there are many parents who are concerned about this, but they don't know what to say to their children. How to say to a young person, you know, you're wasting your time on this. This is bad for you. It's dangerous. Because the usual response, of course, especially if their parents are boomers, is you don't know what you're talking about. Leave me alone. I don't like you. Get out of the house. That kind of thing. Mark, do you have a sense of that from the organizing also?
Well, unfortunately, I haven't been doing the organizing too much. I've been mainly managing the website and these kinds of things here in Leesburg. But you know, I've been getting a lot of phone calls from organizers in Los Angeles, you know, and other places, and it is kind of common for parents to have this problem.
Well, you know, the parents sometimes it's the same kind of thing with the boomer parent. They're on the computer looking at porn, telling their kid to get off the violent games. It's like the boomer parent who says, don't be like me, don't smoke pot.
Yeah, I think the only solution is the best thing. You do have to confront your whoever is on this stuff, you know, whether he's 40 years old or 13. You got to tell him, listen, I mean, especially if it's an adult, then you can say, listen, buddy, you got to rejoin the human race, pal. You've lost it. You're out there. You're playing little kids' games. But also, I think the only real solution to this is we have to get the United States on a Franklin Roosevelt science driver infrastructure building crash programs. If we do not give people a sense of what they could be doing in terms of building bridges, building, you know, producing maglev trains, building nuclear power plants, going into outer space, participating in scientific development, research, experimentation, you know, in choruses, working in theater groups, and real classical culture. If we don't have that anywhere in the culture, then there's nothing you can say to someone that's addicted to computer games.
Actually, I want to throw something out to Rihanna. We have less than 2 minutes, but what Nick's describing is real science versus science fiction. I mean, is this the purpose of science fiction, to induce this craziness?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly would say that it is, and for a leading question. But if you look at young people who are addicted to science fiction, you look at H.G. Wells' books, for instance, and they take away the passion that you can have for working through a real scientific discovery. Because, you know, you're kind of stuck in a fantasy, and you find that usually the fantasy is a sexual fantasy anyway, that the science fiction is a veneer for you know, some other soap opera-ish storyline. Whereas if you really work through something like, you know, Kepler's works, which is what LaRouche has advocated for our youth movement, and what we have teams of people doing right now, in pushing the forefront of that with other thinkers as well, then you have some very different kind of relationship. It's not just looking at a kind of a tawdry and cheap sexual relationship, but you begin to see a sense of a relationship with the universe as a whole.
Well, and you see that someone who engages in that kind of work may be very exhausted at the end of the day, but there's a sense that there was something valuable as in what they were doing, as opposed to the person who gets off a video game and is not sure where they are or what they're doing and is often quite disoriented. Well, I'd like to thank our panel. We're almost out of time. Rihanna, Nick, and Mark, this has been provocative. Our program next week will continue this discussion. In the meantime, the LaRouche Show is on every Saturday at 3 p.m. Join us next week. Thank you and goodbye.